Our text for preaching this morning and our gospel lesson comes from the gospel according to Matthew. It is the account of the transfiguration of Jesus. I invite you to listen with me for God's word. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly there appeared to them Moses and Elijah, talking with him. Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it's good for us to be here. If you wish, I will make three dwellings here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them. And from the cloud a voice said, "This is my son, the beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Get up and do not be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You can't tell the story of the Warren Wilson Presbyterian Church without also talking about the mountains that surround us. This church is just a special place, in part because it is nestled within one of the most beautiful spots in all of God's creation. And I think most people, when they come here, sense that it is remarkable for lots of reasons, most of them having to do with who is here, and not necessarily where we are. But mountain churches are special places, I think, especially when they, like this one does, in stone and wood and glass, reflect so beautifully the natural wonder that is all around us. Preaching and leading worship in this beautiful and historic sanctuary has been an honor and a blessing. It's also been pure joy, in part because I feel like I can be in this space and be reminded of the natural beauty of our mountains. Mountains have always been symbolic of transcendent experiences. Is that because in climbing them we feel a bit closer to the heavens and to God? Something about the view from a mountaintop lifts our spirits and reminds us of what is beautiful and what is true. There's a saying that there are no atheists in foxholes. I can't believe there would be an atheist on a mountaintop either. Perhaps mountains are symbolic of these holy experiences because they are often the location of these experiences, like the one we read about today. But before we climb the mountain with Jesus and these three disciples, let's backtrack just a bit and remind ourselves of what has just transpired. A week earlier, Peter and Jesus have had a conversation. Jesus asked his disciples who people were saying that he was. And their answers ran the gamut of guesses: John the Baptist, Jeremiah, Elijah. Then Jesus turns the tables. "Who do you say that I am?" Peter nails the answer. "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." But leave it to Peter to stretch the bounds of his certainty. Peter was sure he had a hold of Jesus and who Jesus was, Messiah. Peter knew what that meant, too. The Messiah was the long-awaited anointed one from God who would deliver the people Israel from the oppressor. The Son of God was the title reserved for the Jewish king, the conquering hero who would put down Israel's enemies, a heroic, powerful deliverer. That is who Peter was sure Jesus was. But then, of course, Jesus began to talk about how he must go to Jerusalem, not as a conqueror, not as a hero throwing out the oppressive Romans. He talked of going there to suffer at the hands of the authorities. He talked of being executed. He talked of enduring humiliation at the hands of his own people. And then, and only then, being raised from the dead. Well, that was no way for a Messiah to act, Peter was sure. So he pulled Jesus aside to set him straight, only to be called Satan by Jesus himself. Rough words to one so sure about who Jesus is. So just a week ago, Peter went from certainty to confusion. And now, 6 days later, the disciples find themselves on this mountaintop witnessing this incredible otherworldly vision of exactly who Jesus is, or who he will be, the resurrected one, the one that is in the image of God, the one who bears God's glory into the world. And again, Peter, so sure, jumps right in with, "Look, this is good. This is really, really good. Let's build 3 tents. One for you, one for Elijah, one for Moses." There he goes again. Poor Peter. He's absolutely right. It is good to be there. And his impulse is one to which we can all relate, because we all want to hang on. We want to know. We want to be able to say, "This is it. This is the Jesus that we know, that we understand. We have got him all figured out." Have you ever had an experience like this? Your own mountaintop moment of revelation and certainty? Have you taken hold of Jesus in a similar way? Captured him in that campfire moment? Or in the experiences of church school in your youth? Or the feelings that the old hymns, the familiar hymns you learned when you first were taught about Jesus, the feelings that get stirred up in you? Peter and the others had taken hold of Jesus in this experience, and Peter, in all his floundering and misfired certainty, struggles with the same impulse that we all have at times. We want to hold on to the Jesus we recognize, the Jesus we think we know. They had taken such hold that Peter just wanted to stay there and remain with the Jesus of glory. It's not hard to imagine the voice of God coming from the sky as this booming, shattering voice that literally shakes the ground on which they all stand. It might have been like that. This may be one of the reasons why the disciples drop to the ground and quake in fear. What I think that's interesting about this voice coming right after this amazing vision, this voice still commands them to listen to Jesus, not look at him. The voice doesn't say, "Keep your eyes on the one whose glory you have just beheld." Rather, the voice says, "Listen, listen to him." Looking, grasping, holding on, none of this will work with Jesus. Sometimes you cannot hold on. Seems like an appropriate theme for a farewell sermon. Although, as Steve has said, this is a sort of semi-goodbye, since our hope is that we will be able to come back and visit. I still think it's a good point to make at this time. And the truth is, the message for you, in some ways, is more like a reminder. You all are, in many ways, are heeding this message quite well, I think. Things are changing here at the Warren Wilson Church. Steve and I were both at a congregational life meeting this past week, and Eloise Murchison started presenting the committee members with these specifics on how the forward plan was going to affect the work of the committee. And the plan set out would make adjustments that would streamline the work of the committee, but also involve more people and give people smaller jobs and more manageable jobs. And the truth is, neither Steve nor I had even seen this document. It was great. We just sat back and watched it all happen. Watched this work beginning to take hold in our midst. This is just one small example of how I see things changing. It wouldn't surprise me at all to find out that when the church writes a new job description for this position, when they fill it later in the summer, as is the plan, the responsibilities might look very different than the ones that I fulfill now. You are in a time of change and growth and renewal. It's all good, really good, and hopeful and life-giving to this church and to those whom this church serves. All the more reason, I believe, to take God's command, listen to him, listen to Jesus, to heart. Consider what Jesus has just said to his disciples in the verses immediately preceding the ones that were in our text for this morning. Because he says this, "If anyone wants to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me." Remember, he has said this on his way to suffering and death. Listen to him? To him who calls us to let go of life, to deny self, to bear a cross, which is not just a sign of death, but also a sign of complete rejection by the world. Listen to him? How do we survive when we listen to him and listen to him alone? This congregation has done a faithful job of listening to the voice of God and to the call of Christ and in shaping a vision for how you are being led to serve God in this place. But I believe that when we truly listen to Jesus, survival stops becoming the goal. Jesus didn't try to survive. He submitted himself to the journey of the cross. Peter and the rest ultimately did not try to survive either once they understood the death-shattering power of God's love. They faced persecutions as devastating and as difficult as any who suffered in the early days of Christianity. When we listen to Jesus, discipleship rather than survival becomes the goal. And my hope and my prayer for this church is that you continue to listen, and that in your listening, you are freed up to go and be and do all that you are called to do. I can imagine you doing this with wild abandon, trusting that you are now and always will be held in God's care. The beautiful thing about getting to preach my last sermon to you on Transfiguration Sunday is that it kind of reflects where we are. We have to let go. And it's hard, it's sad for me, because I love you dearly. And my ministry among you has been one of the true blessings of my life. You've challenged me and you've taught me and allowed me into your lives. You've been an example of faithful discipleship for my family and for me. And it's been a blessing, a true blessing. But we have to let go. But we do so knowing this. Today on Transfiguration Sunday, we actually get a glimpse of the end of the story. Here on this mountaintop with Peter and James and John, we see Jesus for who he truly is, the resurrected one, transfigured into the image of the Son of God. And here we get a glimpse of how it will all end for Jesus and for us. For at the end, there is only glory. Julian of Norwich was a 16th century mystic who devoted her life completely to the service of God. And she received her own visions of being swept up into God's presence. She wrote descriptions of these visions and what she saw and what she experienced, and then she reflected on them. A quote from some of her writings is one that has stayed with me for many, many years. It's probably familiar to many of you. Finding herself fully in the presence of the glory of God, she had these words of certainty to share. All will be well, and all will be well, and all manner of things shall be well. The revelation of the glory of Jesus does not end with the command, listen to him. In the midst of their fear, Jesus comes to the disciples. He touches them. He touches them with healing, with his healing, life-giving touch. Get up, he commands. But what he's really saying is, be raised up, be resurrected, and do not fear. And when they looked up, they saw Jesus himself alone. At the time, they didn't know what to make of this vision. But after Jesus' resurrection from the dead, the church began to understand that Jesus opens the way of life. Peter thought he had taken hold of Jesus and grasped who he was. But that isn't possible, is it? Jesus, instead, is always taking hold of us and calling us to follow in ways that we never imagined. Amen.